just having liquid cash. I mean, that was so important. And that's something I'm doing right now. That's, I know it's going to put me in a better position than most investors. It's because I've actually got cash available to do something with, even when most people don't right now.
What's better than earning money from a 9-to-5 job? It's earning money while you sleep, which is made possible if you start investing. You're listening to the Real Estate Investing Demystified with your very own dynamic duo, Ava Benesaki and August Binias. Tune in as we discuss everything real estate, both on the passive and active sides. We feature life-changing stories of today's real estate leaders that will help build your own roadmap to success. This is a show that will lead you to a diversified portfolio, a much bigger revenue, and a next-level venture that brings you a smooth cash flow. Let's get this episode started.
Welcome back to Real Estate Investing Demystified.
Welcome back.
Let's get started again.
Absolutely. Let's get started again. Excited about the show today. And is there something you want to talk about before we start?
I was reflecting and I'm thinking, oh my God, I think we've had like 400 some guests on our show, which is unbelievable. And August and I have, you know, been doing this every Thursday for as long as I can remember now.
Over six years.
Yeah. And it's just incredible, the amount of amazing, incredible people that we've met and the stuff we've learned.
Yeah. So, I didn't know this where you want to take the conversation, but let's spend a few minutes on this. But it's been one of the greatest experiences of my life. One of the great things that people don't think about, which I'm going to touch on, is the fact that your offspring's offspring's, this stuff is going to be online forever, right?
That's right. For time to come.
So somebody can say, hey, this was my great grandfather, you know, talking to this guest, and this was his viewpoint about life or other things. That's the exciting part about having a podcast. Now, coming back to actual material things today, I'm not saying that wasn't material, but more, you know, kind of the things that matter today in our lives. I would say that average lifespan of a podcast is 42 episodes. We've had it now.
We've had now over
350, close to 400 guests. And the other part about having a podcast is when guests come on, we have to prep for the guest for an hour before the show. And then we have the show for close to an hour. We get to learn about the person, about the business strategy they utilize, really intimately learn about this person. But that teaches us a lot of things in life as well.
Of course.
The other part about having a podcast is the doors it opens for you. You have a platform now. You can speak. So you can send somebody a message that you really want to connect with and get them to come on a podcast and meet them. We've made friends on the podcast. We've had people invest with us that come on the podcast. We've had people that we've partnered with that have come on our podcast. It's been a really fantastic experience. Ava does sometimes fall asleep on the show. I have to give her a nudge to wake her up.
Sure.
And, you know, it's been a grind sometimes. But aside from that, it's been a great experience.
You love to bug me about that, eh?
You're admitting that you do fall asleep sometimes.
Okay. I have a great time as well.
All right.
So let's get started.
Excited. Yeah, bringing our guest, Chris. We had a great conversation before the show. Learned a little bit about you, but why don't you tell our audience who you are, what you do, where do you live? Give them everybody a crash course on yourself.
Yeah, live in Utah, but raised near Portland, Oregon. And funny enough, I went to college not in money, not with finance. I actually went to college with a major in sociology, with a triple minor in psychology, Japanese, and ballroom dancing. So, so naturally, you know, I did really well in school and then dropped out. Like all people, became an entrepreneur, right?
Well, but ballroom dancing is what you see on TV where they're like some fighters or some other people, politicians, and they go and dance. Is that ballroom dancing? Is that,
or like Dancing with the Stars?
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Okay.
Nice. That's ballroom dance. Wow. You do that. Incredible.
Yeah. In fact, if you watch the earlier seasons, there was a few women that actually danced on the same team that I did here in Utah. And so people like Ashley Del Grosso, there's Andrea Hale. She danced with the ESPN Sports Center guy. Obviously, Louis, I mean, he's been there forever. He was often teaching out here and stuff like that. So I took some classes from him, you know, back in the day. So yeah, no, it's kind of a cool little world.
Awesome. So what do you do after college?
I actually became an entrepreneur. My goal was actually to become a business consultant. But I figured if I'm going to do that, I should have real life business experience. So I took a sabbatical, supposed to be like a 1-year sabbatical, to kind of just put college on the wayside a little bit, find some business to start so I can gain experience and then go back and get my MBA. Well, as I did that, I was looking for some business to start. And eventually I came upon financial advisors. you know, not realizing you didn't need to have a lot of experience in the financial world. You just had to be able to pass a test with 70%, which was easy eventually, once I figured out the little hack code with that. And then, of course, just not be a criminal, not have robbed a bank or something or killed somebody. And you can become a financial advisor too. And so I did that. I became a financial advisor and enjoyed being my own boss so much. I actually never finished my degree. I stayed dropped out of college and went on that path and was that doing that for 4 years. And then in that journey, my dad reached out to me and he said, well, when are you going to advise me? Now understand that my dad was the penny pinching saver. The guy
was this? What time? What circa was this? Around what time? What year?
This was 2005 when I sat down with him.
Keep going.
So we're going back over 20 years ago. And so I'm sitting down with him and I'm looking at his finances and he was a penny pinching saver. The guy bought everything on sale. He was always about save, no debt. In fact, he paid off his house and everything early. So 100% debt free. This guy was like basically a depression era kind of mentality. And by the way, this guy also packed away money into his 401k, getting a match from his employer like every good boy and girl should, right? And as I sat down with him and I looked at all of his numbers, I said, Dad, you're 61 years old. If you want to retire today, you would need to die in about 5 or 6 years because that's when you're going to run out of money. And he said, well, that's not what I wanted to hear. I was hoping you'd tell me how to get out of this job because the stress is literally killing me. Like he had already had strokes and heart attacks by this point. Wow. He's like, I got to get out. And I said, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, if you were able to take out the equity from your house and invest it, it'd be great, but you can't legally do that in mutual funds. So that doesn't work. And so I didn't have any answers for him. I just said, just keep working and save more. And he did. He ended up working into his 70s before he was forced into retirement. And then he actually just passed away last December, 81 years old. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it took me a while to kill him off, but I eventually did it. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't do that. No, he lasted way longer than he expected even. He was not the kind of guy that took care of his health. But, you know, that's the thing is like you could be alive, but not really living. I mean, he was bedbound. And so I was even bankrolling him the last few months of his life, paying like over $13,000 a month for his healthcare, you know, and things like that. So it was hard to watch because, I mean, he got a couple of years that he's like, oh, he got to do karaoke and things that he enjoyed, but it didn't last. And it was because of that situation that I realized, I was like, well, listen, if this is the guy that was the poster child of what I was teaching people to do, right? I was teaching people to basically live like Dave Ramsey teaches you, you know, debt-free, saving your mutual funds, and eventually you'll be financially free and you can scream freedom on the air, like on Dave Ramsey show or something. But that wasn't the case. He was the model example, and yet the model was broken. And so, and I realized I was on the same path. I was doing the same things he was doing. How would I expect to even have any freedom? And it was just a month later, I was talking to a friend of mine and he was a financial advisor. I actually trained him to be a financial advisor, but then he quit to go do real estate investing. Crazy person, you know, those crazy real estate investors.
Yeah, those crazy real estate investors.
I know, can't stand them. But anyways, he actually went in 5 months, he partnered with his dad. He's like, yeah, my dad and I, we've partnered on some real estate deals and we've doubled his income as a professor at the local university. I said, whoa, hold on. You've doubled his income. That's too good to be true. There's no way that's possible. Mm-hmm. He said, well, Chris, let me ask you a question. How many of your clients are really financially free where they don't worry about money? Well, none. They all worry about money. Even the retired ones worry about running out of money too soon. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, how about this? How many of you guys as financial advisors are financially free, not off the commissions you're earning, but actually doing these investments? And as I really thought about it, there's about 100 people in our office. And I said, well, there's guys been working here since the 1970s. I would have to say none. Mm-hmm. There's your problem. Okay, well, give me the answer. I won't give you the answer because you just got done telling me that real estate sucks. You know, and stocks are better. I'm like, no, I'm open. Give me something. And he's like, all right, if you're serious, go get this book called Who Took My Money by Robert Kiyosaki. It's a lesser known Rich Dad series book, you know, basically just tells you mutual funds suck. And then he listens to AM talk radio show with these two real estate investors that were local here in Utah. And so I did, and I got hooked. And the next thing you know, March of 2006, just a few months later, I'm at the point where I say, you know what? I can't teach this anymore. I cannot justify my mind teaching something that I know doesn't work. And so I left at the height of my practice. I said, I'll never teach about money again. I'll teach ballroom dancing and I'll be a mortgage broker. And that's pretty much what I was doing in 2006. But eventually I started to learn how to do real estate investing. I got into, you know, I took my starter home, turned it into a rental. Actually, I sold it to a real estate investor at full appraisal and then leased it back.
But hold on a second. That's right before great financial crisis where people lost their life savings. So mm-hmm. What happened around then? Well, you go from being a financial advisor, being financial savvy, understanding the mechanics of money, but then you get involved in being a mortgage broker and real estate investing. Well, soon after GFC is coming, I'm sure you were not insulated. Talk to us about that maybe briefly.
Oh, definitely not. No, I mean, I got to the point where eventually I had enough passive income. I was able to retire by the June of 2006, you know, so I was shocked that it was that easy because it was about income, passive income and stuff, right? Some of it was lending. Some of it was like taking my starter home, turn into a rental and whatever. But then, like you said, 2007, I actually came out of retirement to teach people how to get out of the rat race, you know, and I partnered with some other guys to do so. And that was about the time that everything shifted because we were mostly educating a lot of real estate flippers or people that were wannabe real estate investors. And then when 2007 hit and all of a sudden the banks tightened right up there by the summer of 2007, all of a sudden our business was struggling because they weren't getting paid. They weren't making money on the real estate. We weren't getting paid as a result. And I was putting all my chips in. I actually got rid of my passive investments, bad mistake, to then go all in on this business, which was now sinking. So I went from financially free in 2006 to all of a sudden now, end of 2007, going to 2008, I was in the hole about $16,000 a month and over $1 million in debt eventually as a result of that, especially as values shifted because I went and bought a new home and I bought a huge one. It was like a McMansion and those values came crashing down, right? And all that kind of stuff was happening all at the same time and I was cash crunched. So I went from literally financial freedom to welfare, like living on food stamps by 2008.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay, that's good really time, hard. I guess, stop there. But I mean, it's shocking because this event that happened in the US and it happened in other places around the world as well, but it was so seismic that it affected everyone, even somebody who was in the financial advising space. You would think that that person would have the financially wherewithal to be able to survive and do good, you know, to do decent, but terrible. So how did you come out of that? What was your path out of that slump?
Well, I definitely stopped teaching people how to get out of the rat race. That's for sure. Cause I can't teach something I don't do. Cause I'm a person. I can never play poker because you'll win all my money. Cause I cannot bluff. Right. I am who I am. So I pivoted the business and instead of teaching people how to get out of the rat race, I started addressing the issue that other people were having, which was similar to mine, which was, Chris, I would love to learn how to do some things, creative things with money, but I don't have the money. And I wouldn't tell them this verbally at the time, but in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, man, my situation sucks so bad, way worse than this person's. I wish I was as well off as they are. So I started asking them, I said, well, listen, if I can help you find the money, will you pay me? I said, yeah, if you can do that, it'd be awesome. It's like, great. Here's some things you can do because I was getting creative trying to figure out how to avoid bankruptcy myself, right? I mean, I was going deeply in the hole, deeply in debt. And so I was learning that there's different things I could do to plug up money leaks, you know, whether it be taxes I was overpaying on, creative ways to pay off debt, you know, that can actually improve your cash flow better. I created a whole system called the Cash Flow Index, which is a debt pay down system that now apparently if you Google it, you'll actually find out it's one of those debt systems that other people are teaching too, right? Things like that, you know, just ways to save money on by like pulling levers on insurances, like, you know, saving on your auto insurance, homeowners insurance, things like that. Just little things to help with the budget and things of that nature, plus earning more income. And I would show them like on average, they would find like a couple grand a month. And so it started to become its own business. So I pivoted away instead of teaching about how to get out of the rat race, it was more about how to find and free up cash. And eventually by the end of 2009, it created a life of its own. I got to the right people that were centers of influence, especially in the chiropractic and dental space. And then boom, our company exploded. We went from almost bankrupt in 2009 so they were doing over 5 million in coaching sales alone in 2010. And so that started to help me build up income, start to help me get things under control. You know, I also shrunk my lifestyle big time. I mean, I eventually foreclosed on my dream home that I had bought in 2006. I foreclosed on that in 2009 and got into a nice small rental to crowd all of my kids into, you know, and we basically made things work. I got my expenses down to like $4,500 a month, which is crazy considering that, I mean, the expenses were over $10,000 a month before that. So wow. I just got really lean and mean. I actually talk about in my book, The Work Optional Blueprint, is that really this three-step area of success is get lean, get liquid, and get out. So the first thing is I got lean. I figured out like, where could I find money? I started tracking my money and seeing where it was all going. So whether you use Rocket Money, Monarch, whatever it is, track your money in business using like QuickBooks, but watching your money on a weekly basis and figure out where, not just to get cheap, but even just to see like, where am I just wasting money I didn't know was happening. Like, for example, just today, as we're recording this, I found out in my own business, I found out that I was paying for a service that went from about $80 a month and jumped up to almost $500 a month just 2 months ago. And I didn't see it until just today. And I was like, crap. You know, I missed it for whatever reason. I missed it. I thought maybe because I thought it was an annual fee that I was paying. But when the second one came out, then I was like, wait a minute, that's not supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I went and found out they increased their fees. So now I'm switching over and we'll probably save myself several hundred dollars a month there, you know, and things like that.
So you know? 2009, you find this new venture helping dentists and chiropractors save money, make money. Then what happens? Talk to us from there. Then what happens?
Yeah. And then as I did that, I started to get myself out of the hole, digging out of the debt that I had and freeing up my own cash flow. Then eventually I started getting liquid, right? So having more cash on hand. See, that's the one thing I learned in the last recession is that although I had some emergency fund, it wasn't enough to weather the huge storm that was coming. And plus, I also made the mistake of throwing all my money into equity in my house. I was paying it down thinking that any time, because I'm a mortgage broker, I could always just pull it back out again, right? And that didn't happen because they changed the rules. The bank said, no, no, we're not going to let you do cash out refinances anymore. And all that equity got trapped. And because that happened not just to me, but to everybody, that's where we saw real estate values tank. And I watched all this extra equity I had in that property just disappear. So I tell people, get liquid, like have the money in cash.
No, aside from personally, talk to him about business-wise. 2009, you start this venture. What happens to your business from there? Talk to us about your entrepreneurial side, your business side of your life. What do you go and do after that?
Yeah, well, I mean, we kept doing that system, just kept repeating it and kept coaching people. And then it got to a point where I started to feel like I wanted more. I even told the guy that was working with us, like, hey, I want to do more than just coach people. I want to get out and speak. I want to do more stuff. I wanted to get that message out more. Mm-hmm. I felt like something was missing. And he just was like, nope, I don't see that. Like, I'll be the speaker. You just take care of the kids at home, so to speak, right? You take care, you coach everybody. Cause he didn't know half the things I was teaching. He would just repeat some of the stuff I talked about and he repeated it on stage. And then people would give him the credit, right? So eventually in 2012, we actually split. We parted ways. I actually launched my company, Money Ripples. Even felt impressed. Just a month prior to that happening, I felt impressed I should start a company thinking that was going to be another marketing arm for the business and ended up being its own company. So I actually launched my own company, Money Ripples, started from scratch with a 2-year non-compete. And so I had to start out with new relationships, new everything. I still kept doing my cash flow process because they were borrowing my process in their company, but it was mine. So I kept doing that. I even did a little bit, you know, I started doing more on the life insurance side of things with infinite banking and things like that I would teach people how to get liquid there. And then eventually started teaching people how to like create passive income. I started adding that in. Once I started personally also doing passive investments, then I started teaching people how to do that too. Because again, I didn't want to teach that. Something what I was doing.
What is passive investments? Describe that. I mean, passive investments know what it is, but just for the audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. To be clear, because a lot of people are kind of ruining that name of, you know, passive income, right? Because you hear people talk about passive income. They're like, yeah, start this dropship business for, you know, with Amazon, which is anything but passive, right? Or, you know, wholesaling is not passive, right? It's an active business. Passive means that you get your money to do the work. So like, for example, even if I bought a property, I wouldn't be the one property managing. I would get a property manager, or I'd use turnkey real estate companies to help me find the property, get the property manager. Well, either they're the property manager or find the property manager and then they manage it. I just buy the property. Or like I'm in a business right now with Raw Land where I'm a 70% partner. I'm financing the whole thing, but they're doing all the work where they're buying and selling raw land and they're paying us back on terms. So we're getting paid mortgage payments from people that buy our land that we sell at retail price. Oil and gas. Again, I'm not the one drilling or doing any of the operational stuff. I'm investing with the guys that are the operators and I'm getting paid off that. You know, syndications and so forth. So, and lending. I'll lend to real estate investors all the time, especially lately. It's been better doing that and then getting paid off of that. And if they don't pay me, I can always take the property and stuff like, of that nature. So again, just, you know, investing with the investors, the operators, and I get paid the passive income from that.
Got it. So you started teaching people how to be able to make passive investments and have passive income. How do you go about sourcing the right operator, asset class, business model to bring in front of your clients?
Great question. Yeah. I mean, one of the things we look for is track record. For example, how long has somebody been in the business?
Before doing the due diligence on the firm, how do you even say, hey, how should my clients be diversified? Have some money in debt, have some money in equity, have some money in raw land, in multifamily, in other
the strategy.
How do you initially come up with that? Because I guess it goes back to your clients possibly about their level of liquidity and risk tolerance and what asset class they believe in. But how do you initially figure out that, hey, as this asset manager individual who's going to bring in these investments to my clients, what's the world I want to play in? What's the sandbox I want to be in? How do you make that decision? And how do you bring deals? Then we can talk about afterwards. How do you bring
deals? First and foremost, I mean, we're not investment advisors, so we're not telling them you should or shouldn't do anything. But we try to give them ideas based on what their objectives are.
Options. You're going to give them options.
Options that exist, and you eventually make the final decision of what you feel comfortable investing in.
Exactly. We're strategists and connectors in that sense. So, for example, if they've got like IRA money, it's like, okay, cool. Did you guys know you can self-direct this? Can we move into a self-directed account? We can connect them with people to do that. And then what are the better type of investments for that certain thing? Because, you know, as many people know, like you wouldn't want to buy a rental with a mortgage with a self-directed IRA because one, you're going to put down double the down payment. Two, you could possibly have extra taxes that you don't want on it, right? So there's some investments that work better with like an IRA or an old 401k than it does with using cash. So we try to teach them the difference of like, here's what you can use cash for. Here's the better investments. Here's what you use IRA money if they have IRA money. Let me give you an example. I had a guy that he came to us and he had about $1 million, right? And he was actually just retired from the military. The financial advisor says you can live on $30,000 a year, which is not fantastic because they tell you you can only pull out 3% a year if you're in your 60s. And he's like, well, I don't want to live on $30,000 a year. I live in California. That's not possible, right? It's like living in Vancouver, you know, on $30,000 a year. It never happens. But anyways, so he was looking for stuff. He found our podcast and then he eventually became a client of ours. And so we said, well, let's find ways to do this. He's like, I want income. That's my focus. He doesn't want growth. We'll ask, is it income or growth? Which one do you really want? He wanted immediate income. It's like, okay, well, let's find what those are. Well, for him, like we ended up buying a couple duplexes that were turnkey duplexes. So again, hands off, he's not managing it. He even got into like a real estate apartment syndication. He got into some oil and gas as well. He really liked that. He even showed his 20 some odd year old kids how to do the same thing. And the next thing you know, instead of living on $30,000 a year, he was now generating about $150,000 a year off that same money. And that's kind of the thing we try to show him, is like, here's the different options. And we show him some other options too, but those are the ones he ended up selecting. He's like, you know what? These are the ones I feel most comfortable about. And we became kind of like the sounding board, right? It's like, here's what I'm thinking, but I'm not so certain. You know, are there risks? Are there things I'm not seeing or things that I should be aware of? Even if they're asking about certain operators, you know, like we can't tell them you should go invest with that person because we don't raise capital ourselves. We connect them. If whether it's people in our group or they go outside of our group, that's up to them. But we'll give them the
wrong. Oh, so you have a group. Do members of the group get to chat with each other as well? Like, is it a that's mastermind correct. Style?
Oh, yeah, great. We have that. Like,
they can tell each other how things has worked or the
or their point of view on a certain investment. Hey, you know,
how's going?
Yeah.
Somebody invest with this.
Or I invested with that GP. What was your experience? What was the communication like?
How do you get compensated? Right? Do you get compensated through fees that people pay to be part of this group? Or do you get compensated? You do. Okay.
Okay.
You get we charge a one-time
as a coach.
Fee.
They're hiring him as a coach, right? Because he's coaching them. You know, everything that really comes along with passive investing. So it's probably a one-time fee, as you were mentioning. Is it a monthly fee after that?
Yeah, exactly. It's like an upfront fee that's, you upfront know, fee. Like anywhere from like 10 to 25,000, depending on the level they're in. And then after that, it's like $250 a month to keep us on retainer for life.
And, they get to join like a monthly mastermind, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. We have monthly calls, actually multiple calls a month. We even have annual masterminds that we do as well. They can be live. Because you're right. Like, I realize that more, like they come to us for the coaching. They want to get connected to the deals and everything. But I mean, at the end of the day, one of the big value adds for them, of course, is when there's other people in the community that are just like them. Even though I see myself on the same journey, I'm just farther ahead down the road than they are. Having their own peers that they could talk to, and especially if they have fears and concerns, because the hard thing is, as a passive investor, is that especially when you go into the real estate or alternative investment world, is that your friends and family aren't doing that too, right?
Exactly.
Like they're just pumping money in those 401ks, thinking that's somehow going to work, even though it hasn't historically worked yet. But they're still thinking that somehow it's going to, because everybody tells you to, especially financial advisors, right? So they feel alone a little bit. So having somebody there that says, hey, we get it. Yeah. And they might ask, like, hey, I've been looking at this particular operator. Anybody besides, of course, Chris or the other coach, Craig, you know, besides those guys, anybody else have any experience with them? What are your thoughts? You know, what have you done? And so it's nice that they can, you know, have that kind of sounding board and people that that are also on the same journey, that don't judge them for doing something different. It does. It makes them feel amazing that way. And they love getting together live, because now it's like you get to create those bonds and that relationship and go deeper in the conversation than just a Zoom call, where Zoom call, you might hit surface level, but face to face, you might be able to go deeper into what emotions or feelings or thoughts you have. You know, you can go down a rabbit hole a little bit more.
Yeah, that's so important to have, I think, because like a passive investor, they have, you know, this guy had $1 million to deploy. You kind of look at all these different asset classes. It could be very confusing. And then, okay, so you find one that you want to invest in. You don't really understand it. I mean, it's not your business, right? Yeah. How are you supposed to look at the underwriting and make sure that the numbers are penciling out to the forecasted returns that are being advertised? So it does, you know, it's very beneficial to have a mastermind to bounce it off.
Absolutely.
What's the perfect profile of a client who wants to come and use your services? What's their age group? What's their net worth? What's their liquidity? Do they all have to be wanting to retire? Can they just have this as part of their diversified portfolio? Like, give us a viewpoint on that.
Yeah, they're generally between the ages about 35 and 55, maybe up to like 59 or so sometimes. They have to be somebody I call as like a brain on investor. They
don't want to be somebody, a brain on.
Yeah, brain like they're on. Actually using their brain. They're critical thinkers, right? Gen Xers like myself, like we tend to be really good at that. Like we tend to like question everybody and think that, you know, we don't just trust people's word. Like we really want to be shown the proof a lot of times, right? And even Xennials too. Like you see that happen as well with the older millennial generation as well. And so people that are willing to question and challenge the status quo, they don't want to live an ordinary life. They want an extraordinary life. They want to have something that is better than just falling in and becoming a statistic. They often have had financial advisors. They probably have at least a couple $100,000 liquid that they could access and use to invest. Otherwise, they wouldn't even qualify to work with us. If they don't have at least $200,000, there's not enough money there to really diversify and do a lot of things with. And so we just don't take them on unless they have at least that much. But a lot of them are, I'd say at least half of them are accredited investors, but they probably have at least $1 million net worth and or income of over $200,000 or $300,000 a year, you know? But really the common theme is they're looking for time freedom. They want to become work optional, or it doesn't mean they really want to quit their job or their business. They might love it. They just want to have enough passive income where they have choice. I'll give you an example. I had a guy that was 59 years old that came and had $1.9 million sitting in his IRA accounts, and his financial advisor at Vanguard wouldn't give him an answer when he could actually retire. And I said, well, how much income are you trying to live on? He said, well, $200,000 a year. Well, I was like, well, that's the problem. Either one, the financial advisor doesn't know what he's doing, and that's why he didn't give you an answer. Or two, which could be likely, is that the financial advisor was scared to give you the answer. Because if you're going to live on 3% a year, which would be the recommendation at your age, you would have to have about $7 million saved up. By the way, congratulations, having $1.9 million. You're in the top 1% or 2% of all Americans of how much they've saved in retirement accounts. That's pretty good, but it's just not enough. And so you'd have to get up to about $7 million and hope and pray you'd get there by the time you're 70, assuming that the market does anything.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, Chris, I don't mind working until I'm 70. I just won't have to feel like I'm forced to work until I'm 70. Mm-hmm. And so I showed him, I said, strategically, and this is even before he hired us, I said, here's the thing, like your goal is $200,000 a year. Watch. I'm like, you have $1.9 million. Say you actually just lend all that money. Not saying you're going to put it all in one place, but say you lend your $1.9 million and make, even on the low end, 10%. What's 10% of $1.9 million? He said, well, that's $190,000 a year. Yeah, $190,000. That's almost your $200,000 a year goal, isn't it?
There you go. Yeah.
I was like, but, and like, so you could actually retire next year just on that alone. But I'm like, but that's not all, because you mentioned you have a rental property, right? It's like, yeah. How much are you making per month on that rental property? $300 a month. Okay. Well, how much equity do you have in that property? Oh, I'd say about $800,000. I said, you realize your return on equity is like 0.25%. It's horrible. I'm like, you could do way better, or 0.3%-ish. And I was like, you could do better putting your money in a CD. I said, instead, let's do this. I'm like, so yeah, let's say you get the $1.9 million invested. That's $190,000. But then let's say you sell this property. You do lose the $300 a month, but let's say that you get $700,000 from that sale of that property that you make 10% on. Guess what? That's $70,000 a year. You're now at $260,000 a year this year.
Yeah, but that property would have gained in the equity as well over the years. It's not staying static as a year's
oh, sure.
by, he's getting that rental money, but the property is appreciating as well, right? So, right. I mean, depending what market it is, if he is in you know, certain markets, they don't appreciate as much as other markets. So depending on where he was. But let's get to the next segment of the show. We're on a bit of a time crunch here. Any questions quickly, Ava, before we
go? No, that was great, Chris.
Thank you so much. All right, let's do the next segment of the show.
Are you ready for the 10 championship rounds to financial freedom?
Let's do it.
Okay, fantastic. He looks ready. He's ready.
He's going to grab you and he's going to go turn you. You know how they do that? That's what it looks like he's ready to do right now.
Awesome. All right, let's get started. 10 questions, whatever comes top of mind. First question, who's been the most influential person in your life?
Oh, man. I would say, I don't want to sound like cliche when I say this. I mean, I would say first and foremost, God, in a lot of ways, because that inspiration I've gotten. I mean, even the name Money Ripples was like that flash of inspiration I got. Whether you say it's God, the universe, whatever, that's it. Now, if you're talking about on the earth, like human being that I've been around, I would probably say the most influential person, I mean, in some ways, good or bad, was my dad. You know, like he taught me a lot of what I am. I mean, the good stuff he taught me, not the money stuff, but the good stuff he taught me was, one, is that your word is your bond, right? Like you do what you say you're going to do, which I wish more contractors would do that, especially today. But two, he even taught me like about things like, you know, like question everything, you know, like question it, like find out, like, is this legit or not? Like question everything. And that's really what's led me to where I am today.
Nice. Love that. Next question, Chris. What's the number one book you'd recommend?
You know, I would say the number one book I'd recommend, I'm going to go steer away from Rich Dad Poor Dad because everybody talks about that in real estate. One of them I would recommend would be probably Richest Man in Babylon.
I love that book. Kind of
interesting basics. I mean, it's tough to read sometimes because of the language in it, but the basics of investing are really right there. I mean, they are. If you really like come at it from a place of, hey, how can I really glean what I need? Great book.
Mm-hmm. Seven Cures to for a Lean Purse. Absolutely. Right. We love that book.
What are the seven cures to a lean purse?
You're going to put me on the spot?
You'll give me some of them.
Make thy dwelling an investment. That's one of them. Put 10% of all the money that you make away. Invest with an expert is another one. Set your family up for the future is actually the last one, I believe. And that was four, right?
Yeah.
So there's three more. Chris, help me out here. What's another one?
I blur them all together. I mean, I'm glad you brought those up because those are the ones I thought of too. I can't.
There's a couple
more. I think there's one about like producing more than you consume, essentially, right? Create more than you consume. So that's basically spend less than you make, right?
Oh yeah, control thy expenditures. Thank you.
Right.
That's one of the cures. Okay, so that's all right. Five. Okay.
All right, you guys getting overly excited. Let's move on to the next question, please.
Ms. Doggis. Okay, here we go. I'm like trying to think. Okay, next question, Chris. If you had the opportunity to travel back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Depending on what age I was, I mean, for the most part, I actually like what I went through because it taught me everything I know now. But if I were to go back to say like 2005, 2006, Chris, maybe even earlier than 2005 would be, I would question myself faster about being a financial advisor and buying into that advice because don't buy advice from people that aren't wealthy, you know, that kind of thing. And of course, just having liquid cash. I mean, that was so important. And that's something I'm doing right now. That's, I know it's going to put me in a better position than most investors. It's because I've actually got cash available to do something with, even when most people don't right now.
Nice. All right. Next question, Chris, what's the best investment you've ever made?
Best investment I ever made was probably, this would be ironic, it was probably starting out as an entrepreneur, as a financial advisor, just because it got me to open up my perspective to something different and new because I want to control my time, my money, my freedom, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It got me on the path of reading like the first book I ever read, personal development book was How to Win Friends and Influence People, right? And Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Think and Grow Rich, you know, all those kind of classics you talk about, those I got introduced to that first. So I'd say that was probably my best investment to get going. Now, was it the final investment? Absolutely not. There was way better rates of return as I got into like things in real estate, but that was my start.
Nice. Now, what's the worst investment you've ever made and what lessons did you learn from it?
Worst investment ever made would probably have been actually my house, the dream home that I bought. Because I remember feeling like something was wrong. I shouldn't do it. But logically speaking, my numbers all supported it. It seemed fine. You know, like I could easily afford it. It wasn't a problem. But I remember putting so much money into that house, even trying to finish off the basement. And then I got the appraisal back and I made more than what I put into it. So I thought I was this genius. until the market reversed. And then all of a sudden that money was gone. It was locked up in the house. I couldn't get to it. I realized that ended up being my bad investment, not because I lost a huge amount of money, but because the money that I did have wasn't in my power, my possession, and then it was gone.
Okay. Next question is, how much would you need in the bank to retire today? What's your number?
I don't need anything in the bank technically to retire today because I just need the investments to pay the income, right? But for my family's security, I told my wife, like, we would have $400,000 that we just never touch. We never invest, doesn't go into business, doesn't go into real estate. It's just there to provide for the family, you know, to protect the family just in case. But do I need to have more money in the bank? No, not at all. Even though I do have more than that, of course.
Nice. Okay.
I guess the how much in the bank is more rhetorical. It's more about like a total net worth, like how much money you need, how much money you need to have to just walk away from ever working again. Or is that even in your periphery? Is that something you would even do? Like that's...
Well, that's what I already did in 2016, the second time, right? So yeah. At the time, all I needed was $10,000 a month and I got there. And then eventually, like now it's like $20,000 a month, but I've gotten well beyond that, about $50,000 a month right now. So net worth wise, I mean, I didn't have to get up. I was only in like the hundreds of thousands of net worth, I think, when I got there.
Is there any amount of money you can have that you just wouldn't ever work again? Or do you enjoy working?
Oh, I love working. That's why I'm doing what that's why I'm here. Because like teaching like this is my joy. This is what gives me purpose.
It's your joy in life. Yeah.
Yeah. I did try to retire in 2017 for a few months and it was depressing. I was like the most depressed I've been in so long. And so,
yeah. What do you do?
Because you don't ski. That's why.
That's right.
That's right. The marathon running is just not enough. It gets boring after a while, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right. Next question, Chris. If you could have dinner with someone dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh, man. Every time I get asked that question, I swear I have a different answer. I would say that answer right now, it would probably, I'm going to say the person that actually pops my head is George Washington, honestly. Oh, like just a guy that's, you know, has a very interesting wisdom. You could tell like he had a lot of patience, very prayerful and stuff. So he had that connection to God, but he was also like very grounded on earth and just a great leader, you know, but he wasn't a loud leader. He was just somebody who led by example. And so just kind of be around that, I think would just be powerful, a powerful experience, you know.
That's awesome.
You have today in the union as a result of him, you know, walking away, saying that I don't want to be a king. He had a chance to have ultimate power.
Yeah.
And he decided to, you know.
Yeah, how many people would do that today, right? Like, how many people's like, no, like, I know you would elect me to do it, but I'm good. I know we have a current president that he would definitely not do that. So, he's like, you know, you're going to elect me again? I'm going to do it.
That's right.
Yeah. A fun fact about George Washington, he's actually the only president who did not live in the White House. I don't know if you guys knew that. That's just a fun fact about
him. Wasn't built yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Next question, Chris. If you weren't doing what you're doing today, what would you be doing now?
If I was doing something different, you know, that's tough because I'm doing what I want to do right now, right? So I can't imagine doing anything.
Well, ballroom dancing.
Ballroom dancer.
Yeah, man. Like, I mean,
professional on TV, maybe dancing with the stars.
I used to have that dream, but not so much anymore. I mean, that could be something I do. Like, I did love teaching dancing. Like, I love the teaching more than I love the competition scene, but the teaching was fun. I do joke with people sometimes that honestly, like, if I wanted to do something kind of fun, I would probably do something in the more hospitality realm, like almost like being a waiter, like a server. Because I love just like psychology, like social psychology type stuff. Like, how can I like influence a situation to where somebody will do something different, good or bad, right? Like, just it's like, could you get your tips to be higher or whatever? Like, I think that's just fun to try out. But yeah, like for me though, teaching something has always been fun. Like, I will say this, if it's not like ballroom dancing, which I've been out of that scene for a little while, actually, like having a gym or something like that, like, I love the physical health aspect, obviously, the running part would be fun. So owning a gym or like doing something like that and maybe just doing the occasional class, even if it's like a running class, would be fun.
Nice.
We got a couple of minutes, top of an hour.
Okay. So next question is book smarts or street smarts?
Street smarts all the way. Okay. I think books are great to give a start, but you need the street smarts.
Absolutely. Last question, Chris, if you had $1 million in cash and you had to make one investment today, what would it be?
Well,
and this is someone who's been around money for a long time, advised people. Yeah. This is going to come from a very important place, Chris. So it's $1 million in cash and you have to make one investment today.
Mm-hmm. I would say this, like for me right now in the current market, right? The current economy, at least with my goals and my vision, I would actually want to find a competitor's business that I would want to buy up. Honestly.
Nice. You would do M&A. You would do an M&A.
Basically. So, yeah.
Good. Interesting. Nice. Cool. I think that's a great answer.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Awesome.
Chris, Perfect. Just let everybody know the best way that they can reach you, please.
If they're listening in and they're not, because we'll put everything in the show notes. They can go and see all your contact information. But quickly, what's the best way people can reach you?
Yeah. Money Ripples. Whether it's moneyripples.com, at Money Ripples on social media, or the Money Ripples podcast, you can find on any podcast platform.
Nice.
Right. Awesome, Chris.
Thank you so much, my friend. You've been the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode. We hope this conversation enlightened you on how to win big in this highly profitable and risk-averse space. Get on your feet and embrace this world that offers so many opportunities just waiting for you out there. Continue your journey to becoming a savvy real estate expert by subscribing to the show at cpicapital.ca. Don't forget to leave a positive rating and share with your friends. See you on the next one.